the Popmatic Podcast for August 5th, 2015. Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Mike,
Jeremy,
Amanda.
As you can hear, we're recording in the bathroom at Music City Central.
For those who has me some toilet paper.
What's this graffiti mean?
For those of you not from Nashville, Music City Central is the downtown bus station. We will be recording in impromptu locations around downtown Nashville while the children's department at the main library is being renovated.
Haven't
they done yet? I don't think so. Speaking of the metropolitan government of Nashville and Davidson County, school here in Nashville starts again on August 5th, and holy crap, that's today!
Woo-hoo.
So today's show...
The traffic was so bad.
Yeah.
That's true. So today's show is school days... We're all jocks, so we're going to crack some skulls.
Good one, nerd. What are you reading?
What are you reading for?
Four eyes.
Yeah, whatever, nerd.
Mr. Brian, what's today's topic?
Today's topic is school days. Now, people say that all art is about pain. Is that true?
Yes.
I think school is pretty painful.
I think school is pretty painful for a lot of people.
Yes. So
in today's show, I think there's got to be a sliding scale of darkness. So we're going to start with the most sunny thing, and then just get darker and darker and darker.
So it's like starting in kindergarten.
It's like kindergarten. It's like we're smart or something.
Yeah, it's like we planned this.
Yeah, this is excellent structure.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
Now, is where we end up, is that more like the post-collegial malaise? Or is it like a... Or like regretting your career choices.
See, now you took it too far.
Yeah, well,
it was brilliant, and then you overwent.
I'm overthinking it. That's how I do it. That's how I roll.
I was just thinking of miserable in high school, but okay.
Okay, well, we got four. So that's almost like freshman, sophomore, junior, senior.
Yeah.
Which is not... Yeah.
We'll do a college episode later.
Okay. Oh, college episode. That'd be cool.
So Amanda's going to start us off with probably the sunniest of this week's picks.
I do what I can. It's hard being a superhero, always having to run off to save the day or catch someone falling from a helicopter. But you know what's even harder? Being a superhero sidekick. Having to be at the beck and call of a possibly egomaniacal, manic-depressive, eccentric billionaire with a god complex while maintaining peak mental and physical capabilities. And don't even get me started on the brightly colored tights. Plus, you have to do it all and still go to school. Now, when we mentioned school days as a topic, my first thought was to talk about Sky High. And that's a movie about the kids of superheroes and supervillains who go to a school where they learn to be the next generation of comic book fodder. That was for Jeremy.
Thank you.
It came out in 2005, starring Kurt Russell and Kelly Preston. But I think I've already mentioned that on this podcast, so I wanted to take that a step further. And after digging a little more, I managed to stumble across the book called Sidekicks, and I can totally not pronounce this author's name. It's Jack D. Ferraiolo. It's F-E-R-R-A-I-O-L-O. Ferraiolo,
I guess, works.
Yeah, whatever you got. That's I spelled it so you can find it.
I bet no one made fun of that when he was in school.
Seriously, nope. Probably not. So, and when I saw the book, I thought, hey, this looks an awful lot like Sky High. Let's read it. So we're going to enter our main character. His name is Scott Hutchinson. His superhero name is AKA Bright Boy. Now, Bright Boy is the dashing sidekick of Phantom Justice. But Scott is also a student at Harbinger Preparatory Academy, which is an elite private school in New York that has seen its share of celebrity kids as well as the wealthy elite. And to his classmates, Scott is just really that wimpy nerd that sits in the corner that no one ever talks to. But what happens when you find out that your evil nemesis, Dr. Chaotic's sidekick, and your archenemy, Monkey Wrench, is really a cute girl at your school? Do you destroy her? Do you ask her on a date? And can we talk about those tights again? I mean, seriously. So as I got into it, the book is actually quite a bit different from Sky High, but in a good way. There's also this really cool physical feature of the book itself. As you look at the pages, like on the side of the closed book, you see two big, thick black lines. And usually, you know, other books I've read, this is just a new section. Like they just put a new black page and delineate a new section. But in this book, these are actually two chapters where surprising evil deeds occur. And it's pretty awesome because when you get to that part, they're black pages with white writing. So like, you know, something sneaky is going on. It's kind of like super cool code stuff, except it's just in English and no one can read it. It's a kid's book, you know, they can't get too complicated. I have to say that even though it is a kid's book, I really enjoyed it. The door is open for a sequel, but I haven't been able to find out anything else. From that author. I'm not going to say his name again because it's really hard.
Mr. F.
Mr. F. So if you read Sidekicks and you want more, the author also has another series called The Big Splash and its sequel Quick Fix. I think actually came out before Sidekicks. And I just started reading The Big Splash, and I would totally agree with his description. That is, it is finger quotes, ingenious junior high noir. It's a little bit like Veronica Mars, but it's kind of more like the Maltese Falcon for middle school. And in this one, at least the main character doesn't have to wear bright yellow Sidekick tights. So far, so good.
So these are written for kids, but fun for adults, too?
Yes.
There's a lot of superhero novels that are not based on, like, existing superheroes, you know? That are, like, there are several that are written for adults that are just maybe just more sci-fi and then a bunch of YA and juvenile stuff too. There's some pretty cool ones. They're like, I think it's like they're like getting better and better, you know?
Yeah, this one twisted pretty good, and I don't want to give you spoilers because it would wreck it, but.
I keep meaning to read, was it X Heroes, I think it's called, by Peter Klein. The zombie apocalypse happens, and a group of superheroes try to save what's left of humanity.
Nice. There's one I want to read called A Once Crowded Sky, about like, maybe it was like the last superheroes. But.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a YA book, isn't it?
Well, maybe it is.
Anyway, we got Jones. Long-time listeners may know that in the long, long ago, and the before time, I was the Jeremy of the podcast. Yes, I was the one with the questionable facial hair, the odd taste in music, and was constantly recommending comic books.
Correction! Jeremy was actually on the podcast
before me.
Yeah.
Oh, dropping the mic.
I didn't really talk about comics much, though.
Aha! Well,
it was a different show.
Hardcore Popmatic podcast fans, go back and find out who's right.
Through the archives, you know.
I did listen to an old one time.
Back when you were recommending, like, All-Star Comics number 4.
We have a new hero this week, kids. It's called Superman. I think he's really something.
In this first issue, Captain America punches Hitler in the face.
I think Hitler's a real menace. Better watch out for him. Good thing we're not at war.
Yeah. But I realized soon after his arrival that Jeremy is way more of an expert at comic booky things than I will ever be. Seems like for the past, I don't know, 5 years, way before I'd actually met him, whenever I would stumble upon a mouth-droppingly awesome comic book downstairs that I'd never heard of previously, Jeremy had put a hold on it months before. You know, so that he's more than I should actually talk to him about comics instead of just stumbling upon him downstairs. Recently, I was surprised to find that Saga, a comic book that I adore, is one of the most popular comic books ever, or something. It's like, I don't really know anything about comics. So, the comic we're going to talk about today is called Deadly Class, written by Rick Remender and drawn by Wesley Craig. Deadly Class is about Marcus Lopez, a teenager of Nicaraguan descent, who is recruited into King's Dominion High School for the Deadly Arts, a school for assassins. Cool. Like a regular high school, the social scene is divided into cliques, but each clique corresponds to a real-life gang. For example, Marcus wants to date Maria, whose clique is formed of the children of Mexican drug cartel members.
Her name's Maria.
See.
Was that what was that story?
I assume so, but I got 10 minutes of that movie and fell asleep and never want to see it again. His best friend...
I'll punch you later, that's fine. Don't bring me
down! I've never seen the sound of this.
I want to bring you down.
Now the things that put Mike to sleep.
Michael Bay's favorite movie.
What's that story?
Yeah.
What?
I won't hold that against it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike.
Oh, this happens all the time. Yes.
Losing
my place, I'm going
to
hold my finger to the place.
There's this really great video on YouTube where this cinematographer explains why Michael Bay's movies like work the way they do, and like why his action movies are actually way better than other people's action movies, and why they're so successful and they're over the top. And
I just like because everything blew up.
Yeah, like broad strokes, but he has like a certain methodology. And he stole a lot of his techniques actually from West Side Story, like the camera work and stuff. There's this awesome video that's like, here's how Michael Bay makes a movie, and here's how crappy rip-off artists try to do Michael Bay and fail and make bad movies. So I will link to that. I'm sorry. West Side Story, that's a pretty good movie, man.
Well, you know, Hitler's favorite movie is Gone with the Wind, so anyway.
I like that one, too.
Amanda and Dictators.
I also like Parker, okay? Friends
in movie dot stuff.
Travel the Will rules.
Best was Conan did that one day with Teletubbies on his show. It was awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry, Mike.
Anyway, his best friend is the daughter of a Yakuza assassin. You know, the preppy kids are all children of the Dixie Mafia, etc. It's also set in 1987, and so lots of 80s references. Marcus's goal in life is to assassinate Ronald Reagan, since his parents were killed in the skirmish with the Contras, you know, the whole Iran-Contra affair. You know, his one of his friends is an expert in explosives, and he also feels like he stepped off of, like, a like Sex Pistols album cover, etc., etc. Like 99% of high school stuff, there's very little mention of academics, which is kind of a shame, since there are classes like Dismemberment 101.
We need to take that.
Yeah, you know, I'm flunking out of, you know, killing with rice and 102. I seem to recall that in the...
rice or rice?
Ricin.
I know what it is. I would be more impressed if it was with rice. Just putting that out.
I heard you can extract ricin from something.
My eye!
Lily of the Valley.
Well, you know you can assassinate pigeons with rice.
Suddenly it's become the anarchist podcast. Like, hey kids, here's some comics that you and your parents will like. Oh yeah, this is how you make deadly poison at home.
I listened to that episode. Tune in next month, kids. I seem to recall in the first trade that there is a storyline where Marcus has to kill a homeless person in a way that looks like an accident for his midterm. One aspect that I enjoy is that while the whole thing is real adolescent angst, there's very little angst about being an assassin. It drives me friggin' bananas that everything involves hitmen always has to have some subplot about how they hate their life. This is their last job. They're trying to reform for a girl. Blah, 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 blah.
Hey, we like the bad boys. You don't have to reform for us.
Those cold, soulless killers.
Yeah, you know.
If you like cold, soulless killers, have I got a book for you?
Wait until you and Jeremy get to our face. We'll have some good social path for you.
That my entire thing would be riddled with things that are bringing up later. It's tricky but not impossible to make a book about a likable protagonist with a bad job, or even a book about a terrible guy who gets brought down by their terrible job. Oy vey. Anyway, Marcus doesn't feel like he fits in, but that's how all teenagers feel about everything. Fun stuff. So now I return back to my regular role, having questionable facial hair, having odd taste in music, and recommending nonfiction that nobody else likes. Currently, I'm reading a book on the filming of Orson Welles' last movie, The Other Side of the Wind, and it is riveting, you guys. Tune in to next week's Fancy Tickler. I haven't finished yet. You know, I don't want to pull a Brian, recommend something I haven't finished yet. So
I wanted to say, Mike, that I've read a couple of books by Rick Remender and have not read that one. But I really liked Black Silence.
Me too. I like the first trade a lot.
I haven't read the second volume, but I really liked it a lot.
We should chat off pod. All
right. Would you like to be left alone for a minute?
So speaking of books that I have read... we're gonna suddenly go really, really dark again. Like I said, we're gonna gradually get darker. No, we're just jumping into a black pit. So I'm gonna talk about a book, and it's definitely a book for adults. It's Tampa by Alyssa Nutting. So what? You're laughing because you know what it's about?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I thought you were
thinking like Tampa.
I thought you liked nutting, and that one made me laugh.
It gets better. It is about Celeste Price, who is a middle school teacher. The twist is that she's a pedophile, but the even bigger twist is that she's young and blonde and very attractive and has a red sports car. And her husband, Ford, is this hunky cop, and they're like the dream couple in their small little town. But of course, she's this like really predatory, obsessed abuser of children. And it's very realistic. There's detailed descriptions of her sexual obsession. And like her whole life, was basically around trying to get a job as a middle school teacher just so she could have, like, access to victims. And, of course, her plan to, like, become a teacher to abuse children goes awry and crap hits the fan. And I think, how?
Jeremy's on the floor over here.
I want to take a shower. We're only halfway through the podcast. So, jeez.
I stopped listening.
I need to go to Amanda Land.
What saves this from being like the literary equivalent of stunt casting, right? I think is its realism, because the book that it's often compared to is American Psycho. But with American Psycho, you know, there's just these long list of his routines and stuff that he does, but it's like you never actually really find out what he's actually kind of thinking about. You know what I mean? It's like all surface. Where this is definitely like she really goes deep into this character. And it's short too. Like American Psycho is like way too long. So if you're like inside the head of this, in American Psycho, it's a killer, but in this case, it's a sexual predator. I mean, it's not a good place to stay. And it's like, and it's really gross and explicit, even for me. Like it was like really like it. Like I just want to say like I specialize in these things, and it was a little bit much even for me.
I don't.
Can't
touch.
Not even allowed to touch it.
Yeah, no, I don't know, right? I'm like,
so, but here's what's like the weird. This I'm gonna apologize, Mike, because this apparently is the pick on Mike day. So,
man.
So
can we go back to picking on Jeremy?
In a weird.
It's too easy. We've done that.
Yeah, I guess so.
In a weird cataloging quirk, like one of the first subject heading under this book is erotic fiction, and I can assure you that this book is not erotic fiction. And because the first subject heading is erotic fiction, like the read-alikes that the catalog throws up. Is like Maya Banks, Sylvia Day. And I'm just like
hashtag not it.
And I'm just totally. I'm just like, you know what? So listeners, if you like Maya Banks, if you like Sylvia Day,
do not
read. Like if you like Dennis Cooper, you should read. You should check out Tampa by Alyssa Nutting, but not those other authors.
Fun fact too: one of the librarians here in our system was in a band. That toured with another band that author was in.
Cool. So what?
Fun fact.
So I have this little personal connection to sorta, not really. It's one of the reasons why I
were you a pedophile in Tampa?
No. Oh, yeah.
Thank you for answering for me, Jimmy.
You didn't do it fast enough, so you need to say no.
Yeah, you need to say no faster.
He's had a really long game.
Dot dot dot. No. It's St. No. Petersburg.
I'm not allowed to go to Tallahassee.
No, I'm not allowed within 50 feet of children.
Go Disney.
I don't want to spoil how the book ends. So Alyssa Nutting used to teach English at John Carroll University, which is a Catholic school in Cleveland. And when I found out the book, I was like, do they know that she wrote this really kind of like, I don't know, like...
they gave her sabbatical for
edgy
this?
Edgy kind of book. Well, and I just want to, even only reason I even bring that up to is my best dog, Kevin, from library school, he went to John Carroll too. So it's like, hey, you know, there's this author that goes to your old alma mater. So I just, doing a little research... She doesn't work at John Carroll anymore. Starting this fall, she works at the University of Las Vegas.
I'll take anyone.
Or I'm sorry, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
UNLV.
Because what you write about in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas.
That was a risky gamble.
Yeah. So that was my step into the darkness. If you want a book that probably unlike anything you've ever read before, Tampa by Alyssa Nutting.
Cool.
Jeremy.
Sometimes I like to check the news in my hometown to see who's dead or in jail. Because, you know,
or both.
Who's dead in jail? Like any town, large or small, there are always some folks who just can't seem to find their way into anything good. This is a very all too common tale. Take Jeffrey Dahmer, for instance. America came to know him in 1991 when he was arrested for killing and eating people. It was a horrendous climax to more than two decades of sort of gore and terror that ruled the American hairline.
Hairlines?
That's better than what you wrote. I love it.
Dr. Freud.
This beehive caused American...
Hide weapons.
I am myself balding.
That's the terror that's happening in your head.
It is. My head is being ravaged.
We're not talking about the reasons that you kill.
That's right.
That's next week.
Oh, man. I'm going to hide my full head of hair.
I meant to say headlines in America. That's what it should. So from the Manson family to John Wayne Gacy to Ted Bundy to the Son of Sam to the Night Stalker to the Green River Killer to Jeffrey Dahmer, all these guys were awful, awful people, and they all went to high school. But only one has a really great comic book about him, which tells the story. Now, actually, that's not entirely true because there's a pretty good one about the Green River Killer, but it's not about high school.
That would be The Green River Killer by Jen Jensen.
So, Durf, back Durf. Pause for laughter.
We have the best comic. We have all best author names today. Like, yeah, I can't say mine. He's got Nutting. He's got Derf.
I believe his name is John Backderf, and he goes by Derf because Derf is, you know, it's a funny name.
It's cooler to be Derf Backderf.
So. I'm Doofusburg. So,
didn't he publish some comics too, something named Derf?
Derf, yeah. So wow. Derf Backderf is a cartoonist from the small town of Richfield, Ohio, and besides being the author, Jesus.
He also moonlights as a Swedish chef.
Derf Backderf.
Wow, that was incredible.
You didn't know that the Swedish chef of the Muppets was he's a comic book artist, and he went to high school with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Wow. That's when Dahmer learned to cook. That's incredible. That was incredible.
Thank you, Mike, for bringing this back to the sunny side.
Wow, yeah. Let the sunshine in. So, Derf Backderf.
Never stop saying
Mr. B. Besides being the author of a couple of well-regarded books and a weekly comic strip, he has the distinction of having gone to high school with Jeffrey Dahmer. Now, this experience led to the creation of his most well-regarded book, My Friend Dahmer. Backderf met Dahmer in seventh grade and remembers him as a shy kid who kind of grew up into an even more shy teenager. There are signs of Dahmer's future early on. He found roadkill and sort of kept it in jars in a shed. But he's mostly just a regular awkward teen, at least from the outside. Dahmer finds some measure of popularity in school thanks to an imitation of his family's interior decorator as a man who has cerebral palsy or something. And then later on, he impersonates the seizures of his ailing mother. So he obviously has a lot of sensitivity towards people. And so this sort of simple teenage cruelty makes Dahmer both a clown and kind of a regular kid. But knowing what we know, it kind of gives the book an atmosphere of fear and suspense, which sort of permeates every page of this thing. Dahmer was always sort of on the periphery of Backderf's social circle, but they did appear in a high school variety show together with the author.
Wasn't Sweeney Todd, was it?
No, the author, this is a recurring theme of this episode.
Eating rubble.
The raw, wow. It was my dinner of Andre.
Zing.
Yeah. Good one. They were at a variety show together. The author was dressed as Adolf Hitler, and Dahmer was doing his spasmodic, quote, interior decorator impersonation. So that is such, to me, that is such an odd juxtaposition of historical figures and regular folks. They could probably only be topped by the guys who used to get high with President Obama when he was in high school. So all this is kind of funny, ha-ha, and funny strange, but this is actually a pretty heavy book. Backderf does the unimaginable in that he makes Dahmer seem kind of human. We see much of the story from Backderf's perspective, and that goes that alone goes a long way toward humanizing this famous monster. But he completes the transformation through research, interviews, and all that sort of good academic stuff. The person who emerges in Dahmer is not unsympathetic. Dahmer regularly went to school drunk. Pounding beers before class, like drinking like a six-pack really, really fast, drowning his sorrows like of his parents fighting, his sort of budding necrophilia, his repressed homosexuality, and the sort of isolation that he felt because of all these things going on in his head. So if you're a sad teenager, know that it could always be worse, and have a great school year.
What is it, Brian?
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. Either way, it's tickling our fancy. Mike?
I added me in there, so.
Me?
Maybe we should actually write down what those lines.
I like that we all say it slightly different.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like it being creepy.
That's what tickles our fancy.
Yeah. I know. Speaking of serial killers and... the first thing tickled my fancy this week is Derf Backderf.
Backderf.
Which is the best name I've heard in the podcast since Dick Trickle. But so I get the fun of recommending something I really love again and messing it up and then hearing the episode next week and finding out, oh, I just done terrible. Oh, boy. Hello, teenage America.
One Hi, of my, Mike.
Hold on. One of my favorite bands, possibly my favorite band, is coming to the Exit Inn on August 11th. KMFDM.
What does that stand for, Mike?
Kein Mehrheit für die Mitleid. Oh. Or No Pity for the Majority. Oh. Ha ha. Or possibly it stands for Kill Bleep Depeche Mode.
That's what I thought.
It depends on, like, you know, they kind of are coy about it. Formed by a group of German performance artists in Paris in 1984, KMFDM is usually classified as industrial metal type music, along with Rammstein and to some degree Nine Inch Nails. Although the band leader slash singer slash songwriter slash only person from the original lineup, Sasha Kaye, describes the band as industrial alternative electronic crossover rock and danceability.
Wow.
Lyrics-wise, many of the songs are about how KMFDM is amazing, or advocating violent uprising revolution, or how war is really stupid, or how KMFDM is really lame and you should not listen to it. The songs are pretty fun. There's one called Sucks. Nearly every CD has a really cool illustration by an artist named Brute, which looks to me like a cross between a woodcut and a Soviet propaganda poster. I've listened to pretty much everything they've ever made, and I love it. Hoopla has most of their discography, recommending a song or two is really hard as of yesterday, or I guess last week, if you're listening to this. I made a 50-song playlist on Spotify, which doesn't feel like enough.
So here's samples from all of them.
Well, beginning with their CD, What's Up Deutschland, now we got More and Faster, KMFDM. Extort, Symbols, and Attack Reload are probably my favorite CDs. The latest single, Salvation, is good. Although, if I had to guess to pick a favorite song, that would come be Anarchy off of the album Symbols. Trapped under ice, comfortably cold. I've gone as low as you can go. Feel no remorse, no sense of shame. Time's gonna wash away all pain. I made a god out of blood. That's superiority. I killed the king of deceit. Now I sleep in anarchy. I made a god out of blood. The last concert of theirs I went to changed my whole opinion on concerts. It was the greatest time I've ever had a concert ever. My conscious thought went away and I floated on a cloud of bliss.
Whoa.
I didn't go to a concert in for 10 years before that, and now this year I'm planning on going to at least 3. Good times. What have you got, Jeremy?
I'm also going to tickle my fancy with some music this week. It is the Meat Puppets' third album, Up on the Sun. I picked up a scratch copy of this at McKay, and it's the second best $1.25 I've ever spent. Shout out to my scratch copy of Master of Puppets. As the first best $1.25 ever spent. So as I said, this is the band's third album that was released 30 years ago when I was in kindergarten. But of course I didn't hear them until I saw the two Cousin It looking dudes take the stage during Nirvana's Unplugged show in 1993. I really came to them sort of late though, because at that time in 1993, 94, they had kind of a hit song called Backwater. Off the album Too High to Die, and I liked that. I had it on cassette, but I didn't listen to any of their older stuff till maybe college or later, and the songs that are on the Nirvana Unplugged album are Lake of Fire, Oh Me, and Plateau. Those are all also great, but I hadn't heard Up on the Sun before, and it is really odd. They have kind of a crazy guitar sound, and I was thinking about it, because they have like this country thing too, and like a little prog thing, and it's almost like if Yes was Johnny Cash's backing band. Maybe?
I listen to that.
Maybe. So,
I wouldn't. That sounds terrible.
It is pretty great. Unfortunately, the library does not own Up on the Sun anymore, and that might be a correction.
Too hard to type that in the search box before we start.
I did it, and I can't remember what my result was. Yeah, I think it was missing.
I would go to Hoopla, and suddenly Hoopla last year got every song I've ever wanted. Yeah. So it's like, you know, before that, it's like, I'm never listening to recommend music on this podcast ever. Yeah. And then after last year, it's like, oh, okay. You
know? I would also like to say that Hoopla has been tickling my fancy, except for the quirky bug thing that happens where the app just starts playing on my phone even after I've turned it off. But the only Meat Puppets album that is on Hoopla is Too High to Die. But I don't have that anymore, and I've been wanting to listen to it, so thanks, Hoopla. Amanda?
Okay. Well, for some reason, I think I have been dubbed the unofficial historian of my family. we talked about genealogy a little bit ago, and so now my grandmother recently dug out the letters that my grandpa wrote to his mother during World War II, and when I begged, she let me borrow them. Now, there's probably about 100 or so letters I haven't really gone through. There's 3 boxes worth, and I haven't counted. Wow. And so my grandpa was drafted into the Army in 1943 when he turned 18. Now, he didn't meet my grandma until after the war in 46, so that's why the letters we have are written to his mom. And I don't know how grandma got them. I'm still working on how, I don't know, if he just had them and she found them in the attic, or I don't know. I'm working on that. But so grandpa ended up assigned to the 34th Signal Construction Battalion. He was in the Signal Corps. And in the fall of 1943, they actually came to Tennessee on maneuvers. They were stationed in Lebanon, and then they went to Manchester. And my grandpa spent his 19th birthday in Manchester, not a Bonnaroo, but he was stringing wire from telephone poles. So far, I've only made it through to the spring of 1944. They just got shipped to England. And it was interesting because when he was stateside in training, he could write whatever they were doing, what they were, like all the towns they drove through, went on the train, like what they were doing. And now that he's gotten closer to the war theater, his letters are a whole lot more general, more about family and what he misses because he can't write about where he's at or what he's doing. So it's kind of weird to see the change. Now, there's good and bad with the letters. We were lucky. My grandpa came home safe and sound from the war. And the hard part is kind of reading them, like going to the movies and meeting girls and, you know, about all these boys that had the same experience as their grandpa did, but they didn't make it back. So that's kind of heavy. It kind of gives a whole new meaning to the term the greatest generation, because they definitely earned that. I think the best part about the letters, though, is that my grandpa is a really good writer and he's funny. Horrible speller, but I mean, like, actually kind of trained, but his handwriting's really good, so. He keeps referring to his mom, like he'll call her old gal or mommy old hen. And then one time he even signs off, be good, you old fart. So, I mean, I can imagine saying that to my mother, but apparently he did. And one of my favorite quotes has him discussing women. Like I said, he was single when he went into the Army, and so he was only 18, and he was a little nervous about kissing that many girls. But in one letter he wrote to his mom that when I kiss them, they stay kissed, ha ha. So, it got kind of rowdy.
That's the first draft of Tampa.
But not weird. So my grandma, I think she kind of wants to make a book out of these eventually. Yeah. So once we get them read, we'll have to see what we can do.
Cool.
And it's interesting, too, because I've grown up knowing that my grandpa was in World War II, but he's never really talked about it. Like, it's never been, he just kind of didn't ask. And so I think maybe because he turned 90 last October that he had 70 years to kind of let it rest, and now it's kind of coming back. So either way, you know, it's still interesting to kind of go back and see what the soldiers had to do for our country.
My stepmom's dad was in World War II, and I don't know everywhere where he was, because he didn't talk about it that much.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in 2001, 2002. But I know, like, he always hated being cold. Like, mm-hmm. their house was always blazing hot, and it was because he had, like, been out
in
pretty rough conditions. But he was a really handsome guy and had, like, this really great voice, and so he was on the radio over there, like, the Armed Forces Network.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he was older, he had, I think, throat cancer or something, and he lost part of his tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought of the head that talked like this kind of thing. And he was telling me and my dad about, he was in Paris. There's, like, some famous picture of troops marching into Paris.
Liberation Day. Yeah.
And, like, he's, like, in the front line or something. Like something. But he was telling me and my dad about him being in Paris on VE Day.
Mm-hmm.
And And he said, I got lucky four times that day. But he said it, but he was like, they were so happy to see us. It's a good story. Cherish it always.
I have one big correction. We did a vacation episode because a new National Lampoon Vacation movie was coming out.
Oh, yeah. We never mentioned that during the actual episode.
And the host forgot to mention it. Does anyone else have any corrections?
I have a minor one. Take your correction because, like, I don't think people are going to care about that.
I care.
I've seen 85 commercials for it.
As the person who is the host, who deflected his own guilt and incompetence, I care.
Yeah, my Waze app, you can have Rusty do your directions.
So what?
You know, Waze, the GPS app.
Oh.
And you can have a... minor correction, I didn't do basic research into the movies that are on Netflix that aren't... or whatever on Shudder.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that too.
Yes, well, you know. So, but there is an article that Shudder posted that I guess I can send to Brian that has 180 horror movies that are on Shudder that are not on Netflix. Most of them I've seen before, I don't like, so like they didn't come to mind.
No, I know that Reanimator is on Netflix.
Yeah, you said that, and I was like, no, that is, because I
have it on Blu-ray, but I don't want to watch it on Netflix.
Hi-oh. You know.
Any other corrections?
I would just like to say that the sneaky last tidbit after, like, everything was, like, the best one ever. I was sitting there, he's got to put Jeff Goldblum, and then he did it, and then it morphed into Star Trek.
And that was, like, yes. It was creepy. And like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was
I finished listening to it, and I went up to him and was like, kudos, man.
Yes.
That was well done.
That was a high quality act.
Only hardcore Pop-matic fans have any idea what you're talking about.
but they're really liking it.
Yeah.
So... some other addendums, the little on vacation soundbite I had was from Rhett and Link, YouTube stars. They make funny videos on YouTube, but a handful of people that actually just make YouTube videos for a living. Bronson, I believe, was the movie where Tom Hardy...
Yes, it wasn't until later. I was like, oh yeah, Bronson.
Yeah, I only mentioned that because it was directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, whose movies and soundtracks I've talked about on the podcast before.
Does he wear a cool satin jacket in that movie?
In the cover of the box, at least, he doesn't even have a shirt on. So.
Oh.
No, he's like... He's
more into beating people to death, literally.
Oh, nice.
It's a movie about prisoner, like the notorious, most violent prisoner in the UK, who basically has made a career out of just being in prison and causing trouble in prison. He's still managed to do that his whole life. And, like, when he went to prison, he took the name Charlie Bronson.
Yeah.
As a pseudonym, because he was going to be a badass. It's actually pretty experimental for what it is. But hey, Refn is an interesting director. Okay. And Tom Hardy's a brave actor. Okay. So Jeff Goldblum laughing was actually not my first choice for the
Yeah, it took me a second. What is that?
Seriously, you knew right away what it was.
It freaked me out.
So,
as I said before, I only watched the movie once. So, you know.
What? It was not my first choice for the Easter egg at the end of the show. My first choice was actually If Google Was a Guy, which was so hilarious. Totally made me lose my composure at work, sitting in my cubicle. It was so funny. But it was... basically, the gist is the guy sitting at a desk, and people come and say to him what they type into Google, and a lot of them are like really kind of blue.
Yeah.
And so I would have had to censor a bunch, but totally hilarious. And I just, there's a whole series of them, but the first one was, even the way that it was edited was like really smart and funny.
Yeah.
So If Google Was a Guy, that was by College Humor on YouTube. You could just...
College Humor, that's, yeah, thank you.
You can Google that.
It'll be
the first hit. It's really funny. For more information about Google and Jeff Goldblum and Star Trek, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
That theme music is by
Adam Dean.
And next week,
Summer Challenge.
We defeated Summer Challenge.
Right. Punch in the face.
My friend.
The challenge of beating the challenge. We'll be right back.
I haven't finished it yet. You know, I don't want to pull a Brian, recommend something I haven't finished yet, so.
I do we'll it
see.
All the time.
And, well, I'm
speaking of Brian.
I'm holding a podcast producer card.
Is it Springtime for Hitler?
I have occasionally mentioned books that I have started and enjoyed but not finished.
Yeah, well, you know, but, you should wait until you get the whole experience before,
I recall a few weeks ago, I had to edit what you said because you recommended going to an art show that you hadn't went to yet. So I had to edit it so it didn't seem like, you said, it's tickling my fancy, but I haven't gone there yet. So
I would also like to argue for Brian is that he personally said he stopped reading. Yeah. So he hasn't recommended anything he hasn't started because he hasn't started anything lately.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
He's a lot on his plate.
So
I guess producer cards.
I'm new things to wear card. Every single day.
I'm gonna play.
That's a tricky one.
I'm gonna play my producer card again. Last week I actually did recommend a book that I hadn't started yet.
I tried to argue for you.
You know what? I feel vindicated. Man, this is making me feel bad, like I'm a jerk picking on Brian. It turns out that,
I only pick. I don't last pick week. On everyone, just Jeremy and Brian.
He knows better.
That's right. Amanda would take me down.
Talk about deadly class.
You know,
she's deadly.
You know, timbre is a funny word. Punch in the face. You know, West Side Story is kind of.
I will throw a shoe. Don't think I will.
She was raised in the Middle East.
I talked about a book that I hadn't read yet because the book had not been released.
See, that doesn't count. That's fair.
Does the library have it?
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yes. Yes.
But it hasn't been released?
On order.
It was... Library realness card. It was released. It was
this whole deck we haven't played yet.
It was released yesterday.
I almost came through my nose.
Okay, the day that we are recording, it was released the day before the day we were recording.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So it was released the day before the podcast that it was mentioned on was published on the library website. Yeah. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Legit.
This is a big fleshy middle you're gonna have a lot to play with here.
Mm-hmm.